And so in dating, I think that you have to take not a scuba dive, deep dive level. Okay, folks, like we're talking about a snorkel level into trust building, into building intimacy. Can you tell this person something about yourself that may be a little bit closer to your chest? So I'm a Trekkie. Do they line up about you being a Trekkie and want to know more? Or do they poo-poo it and now they tease you about it? And how does that feel? Nobody deserves to be teased and put down. That might not be the person for you if you can't trust them with even some of the basic info.
Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach. Joining me today is Dr. Lex Brown James. She is a sex therapist, educator, and she runs the Institute for Sexuality and Intimacy. Dr. Lex is also a best-selling author on Amazon. She is joining me to talk all about relationships and dating. I am so excited to have her with me today. All right, Dr. Lex, I'm so excited to chat with you more about being single and dating and transitioning into relationships, because I think that it is hard to go from being single and dating to in a relationship. And I'd love to just start with, what are some of the quality of dating versus some of the qualities of in a relationship?
So some of the qualities of dating are going to be super individualized. You get to put yourself first. And I think everybody needs to be able to do that in order to know what you like, what you don't like, how to advocate for what you like, and how to put up boundaries about what you will do when things are happening that you don't like. And also to get to know yourself, to know that I really like salsa dancing, or I really don't like salsa dancing, and this is my favorite hobby, and I'm good just by myself. Knowing that you're worthy as a whole human, I think, is super important, especially when you're dating. And especially coming across various types of people who might not realize that you're important as a human. And then I think in relationships, it just looks a little bit different. It's your willingness to figure out compromise. You might not be able to solve all conflict, but you have to be able to compromise and not have your morals and values be the things that you're most compromising. And you learn to not do that because you dated for a while. So you know how to advocate for yourself.
Oh, I love that. What are like some tips for compromising in relationship?
So John Gottman has a statistic. He says 69% of conflict in relationships is not solvable. 69%. So a majority of conflict is not actually solvable. You're not going to get an answer. What's most important is how lovers actually approach the problem. Can they laugh about it? Can they acknowledge one might be hurt or angry? Can they hear that? Can they take care of themselves in that moment of conflict? Are they flying off the handle? Are they being hurtful to their partner? Those things are harder to recover from. Those things are harder to grow in intimacy with. So it comes to compromise. It comes to a willingness to understand. It comes to sometimes just agreeing to disagree if you're able to. I know that this is the point where we don't necessarily agree, right? And then moving forward from there in how you want to operate as a lovership. If you don't want to be lovers in a way that is conducive, then choose to not be lovers. That's okay. But if you actually want to be lovers, if you want this romanticism, then you work on building intimacy, even when there's a conflict that arises. It just doesn't define your lovership.
I did not realize that so much conflict is unsolvable. And I think that makes sense. I mean, we're different people. We have different desires. We have different goals and aspirations. And learning to support each other is really important. And learning how to manage conflict is a huge part of life.
For sure. Absolutely.
How do you know when you are ready for being in a relationship?
Most people will say when you've like sown all your wild oats and all that. I don't believe that's true. I think that you're ready to be in a relationship when you're able to hold on to yourself and your own emotionality. So you're able to, the big therapeutic word we use is differentiate, but you're able to tell the difference between what's your stuff and what somebody else's stuff is most of the time. You're not going to be able to do it all the time, and that's okay. But most of the time, you're like, ooh, it's not my stuff. You're really upset right now. I can support you being upset, but I don't need to be upset too. I'm not actually upset. I'm having a pretty good day. Like, it sucks that this is happening for you. How can I support you? And those aren't my feelings. So when you're able to really keep a hold on yourself, I think you're ready for a relationship. When you're able to express your boundaries and your needs because you're aware of what they are, I think that you're ready for a relationship. And when you've worked on healing some of your stuff, all your stuff won't be healed. We're always in a constant state of healing. But you're recognizing like, ooh, this is some of my stuff and it's still tender. And I can tell that to a potential partner, a potential lover, and they take care of it. I can trust them with it. Once you recognize those pieces, I think you're ready to like, okay, I can settle down with somebody or some people and figure out what it is that I want.
And yeah, I love that. And I think that, you know, you brought up healing. For a lot of us, we're on kind of a healing journey and learning to take care of ourselves, I guess you could say. One thing that I've noticed in like the dating pool is that a lot of women are doing the work. They're doing the healing and coming across men who have also done the work can be kind of challenging. Like it seems like they're few and far between. I would love from like your perspective, what you see from men doing the work or not doing the work. Like what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I love this question because I think the dating pool has pee in it. And I think everybody needs to do some work somewhere along the line. And I think men are just now getting permission to do the work, right? To say like, ooh, everything isn't hunky-dory as a man, right? There are some things that are hard. A phrase that I love is that, I don't know if it's Audre Lorde or Patricia Hill Collins or Bell Hooks. It was one of them who says that boys are the first victims of patriarchy. So the idea that boys have to castrate themselves in order to become these men, right, is abusive and traumatic. And I think men, and the men that I see, the men who maybe I see in my practice over the last decade who might have ended up in a relationship ending but stayed on for therapy, they are really undoing a lot of these harmful messages about what it means to be a man and how they're supposed to be a man and really defining for themselves. So I do think folks are doing that work. I think specifically men are doing that work, and I think it's growing in droves. I think what's most important is that they get the permission from the people that they're dating to do that work or to be vulnerable without being emasculated and demoralized and put down and considered less than because they are able to emote and share that. It's one thing to be like, I want people to share their feelings. And then when a man shares their feelings, it gets used against them as a weapon. That means you're not safe. That doesn't make any sense. It's directly contradictory. So I think men can do that work, would be more willing to do that work if it wasn't used as a weapon as much and seen as, but specifically by the people they desire, as less manly.
I love that you brought up allowing men to feel safe. What are some ways that you can help men feel safe to share and be vulnerable in a relationship?
Oh, that's a great question. I love it. Ways to help men be safe and vulnerable are, I want to be careful because I also don't want people in relationships with men to sacrifice themselves for men's safety. I do not think that specifically women and feminine identified folks need to be men's respite place. Like men have to find other places to help them heal. And I think encouraging. So I really want to hear what you think and what you feel. And if a guy's like, oh, it's going to hurt your feelings, and be like, okay. Well, maybe I don't want to hear that if it's going to hurt my feelings. But how can we talk about this in ways that aren't directly related to me? Right? Being able to be inquisitive and then also hearing them when they say this bothers me or I'm uncomfortable or I don't like this or I'm really angry about this. Taking a pulse and be like, I need to hear more about this. Tell me more. Oh, you're not ready to talk about it? Okay. I'm here when you're ready to talk about it. It's really important to me. Or I feel this distant and you tell me what's going on your side of it. And so being really curious and really empathetic of, wow, this is really impacting you. Okay, what do you want to do about it? I don't need to solve this problem. Like, you're capable. I trust that you're capable. What does that look like for you? What does change look like? How would you rather feel? And sometimes we actually have to give them the language and the permission to feel, because men have been taught that they're only allowed to be okay or angry. They can't be too happy. They can't be really sad, right? Because those somehow have been considered to be weakness. And we're like, nope, you can feel all the ways. And those are absolutely human. And sometimes they might even need help saying, like, what is this feeling? I don't like it. That's helplessness. Welcome. It doesn't feel great. Let's figure out ways that we can empower you, right? So I think all of those are important.
I know for me, like on my journey, language around feelings, I didn't have the language. And that was one of the huge things that I had to learn, is how to identify my feelings. Because so many of my feelings were just, I'm fine, I'm okay, I'm good, it's great. Like I just didn't have any depth. And so I had to learn that. And one of my favorite tools for that is a wheel of emotions.
Yes, absolutely. That's one of my favorite things too. I also do a mind-body connection. You're fine, but your fists are balled up. You're fine, but you feel a knot in the middle of your chest. You're fine, but you haven't had a bowel movement in 2 weeks. What's going on? You're not fine. And so sometimes recognizing that physical presence of like, I'm grinding my teeth, or I feel my nostrils flare, I feel hot, right? They're able to identify something's up. Okay, I admit something's up. My body is letting me know that something's not okay. And being able to tap into that as well.
Yeah, which I think is also slightly learned, because a lot of us, especially as women, are taught to not feel that. And I've done millions of podcasts about this, so I won't harp on it too much, but you have to learn how to slow down enough and to feel all of those things and not tune them out and not dissociate from your body's feelings as well. Are you ready to start understanding yourself better, learning and recognizing your patterns, and really develop a relationship with yourself? If this sounds like you, the Unleashing My Power, a Women's Empowerment and Gratitude Journal is for you. This journal was specifically curated for women just like you to help you take back your power and develop and go to the next level in life. My friend Danielle and I created this journal because of our own experiences and what we were looking for in a daily practice to improve our connection to self and really become connected with ourselves. This is game-changing, and the feedback that we are getting from other women who have started using this journal is absolutely amazing. You can find it on Amazon, or you can go to jordandanelle.com/journal, and it'll take you right there. I hope you enjoy. Be sure to go snag yours right away and leave me a review. Tell us what you think about it. Slide in the DMs. I know that your life will change when you start using this journal. So I would love to talk more about like dating compatibility. How do you know if you're actually compatible with somebody?
Ah, great question. So with the pandemic, we saw people starting to swipe on the apps. I don't know which way, because I'm old and I've been in a relationship forever at this point. Whatever way you swipe to say you like somebody, we've started to see people swipe more on people that they didn't necessarily consider like an 8, 9, 10 in physical attractiveness because of their profiles. Like they were really interested in what the person had to say, even though they didn't think they were like the most attractive human being on the planet. And so in dating, I think that you have to take not a scuba dive, deep dive level. Okay, folks, like we're talking about a snorkel level into trust building, into building intimacy. Can you tell this person something about yourself that may be a little bit closer to your chest? So I'm a Trekkie. Do they light up about you being a Trekkie and want to know more? Or do they poo-poo it and now they tease you about it? And how does that feel? Nobody deserves to be teased and put down. So that might not be the person for you if you can't trust them with even some of the basic info. How are they going to handle your deep down, your real hurts, if they don't handle the basic info with care or with excitement or with support? And so you can do this, like, can I trust you? And I think that's what all relationships are, right? But I feel safe with you. Are you a person that I can talk to who won't necessarily put me down, but will tell me when I'm wrong, but also support me in whatever the healing journey is I need? And I think that's what we're constantly looking for. We're constantly looking for some validation. And when it's romanticism, we're adding some affection on top of that, and then some long-term companionship.
I would love to talk more about the statistic of how for every one time you are hurt, or for instance of hurt or act of hurt, you need 5 acts of intimacy. I would love for you to tell us, like, how do you build intimacy and how important is this in relationship?
So I run the Institute for Sexuality and Intimacy. So I think it's probably the most important thing ever. And not just romantically, but since we're talking about romantically, we'll stick there. I think that intimacy, as defined by the model that I go by, is being able to take risks, being able to share secrets, being able to be vulnerable with someone, and to have that trust that is never doubted. So even in that healing of the, ouch, this hurt thing, building intimacy is, oh my gosh, I can trust you to be like, I'm sorry I hurt you. I want to know more about it. Right? You don't have to be like, I'm sorry I did the thing, because you might not be sorry you did the thing. You might very intentionally did the thing. Right? Did the impact mean that you wanted to hurt the other person? And sometimes that's not the impact that we intend, but it's what happened. And they'd be like, ugh, I didn't mean to hurt you. I wanted to make a big splash, but I didn't mean to hurt you when I made the big splash. I'm sorry. Right? And so being able to acknowledge that impact, and also that you're safe enough for them to tell you that hurt. If you're not safe enough for a person to tell you that they were uncomfortable, that that hurt, that they felt shame, they felt disrespected, they felt unheard or disregarded, you can't have true intimacy because they're not showing their vulnerable selves with you. And I think that makes a very watered down, non-romanticized, unfun relationship.
Yeah, a little boring too. How do you navigate new relationships and navigate through all of this like murky water?
Oh, so my grandma lived in Hawaii for, 20 years or so. And she has this thing called happy weight. So at the beginning stages of a relationship, you gain happy weight because you're in each other's faces all the time. You're eating, watching TV, watching movies, and you're just like in each other's world. It sounds amazing, but you tend to like gain weight at the first stages of a relationship because it's just food and fun all the time. And so that's what we call enmeshment. It's when you're recycling the same energy with each other over and over and over again. It was like, well, how was your day? You were there the whole day. I texted you nonstop all day, or we're on each other's social medias all day. So I know everything about you. And so that's the first stage. It's the getting to know you stage of like, am I excited about you? Can I be excited about you? Let me pump you up. I want to be pumped up by you. I want to be seen by you. And that's when you start to navigate those murky waters in that excitement of like, whoa, I learned this thing about you. That's so cool. Or did you work on that? Because that sounds like it could have a lasting impact on your life. What's the work you've done around this? Because that makes me a little bit nervous. You have sex maybe for the first time together and you realize, ooh, they think my clitoris is a DJ booth. I don't want to have sex with them like this again. Can I tell them that? Is it safe to tell them that? Will they take this feedback? Oh, they did take the feedback and now we have great sex. Or no, we can't continue to do this. So I think it all depends on like starting out with that happy, we're good, let's start to baby crawl and baby step on how to trust one another and giving them those little pieces first. And once they're digested and you feel safer, we can step up to larger pieces.
I love that, where you're kind of easing into it. And that's really, I guess, what relationships are. Like, you don't just show up day one, like, here I am, let's get married. Like, you're easing into learning each other and determining if it's a good fit for you. I mean, that's the whole point of dating and relationships.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What advice do you have for women in particular who maybe are wanting to date or start dating more and are kind of getting out there, but not really sure how to navigate the dating world?
Oh, well, that's not a small question. Potentially like $1 million question, right? The one thing I do tell folks, specifically women who are always looking for men, and I have way too many good girlfriends that are single, and I am the best wing woman you will ever meet. I shoot my shot on everybody's TikToks. Like, I have friends if you're single. So that being said, do the things that you love. I tell them, do the things that you love. Go sign up for that rock climbing thing and deep sea kayak. Go do the things you love. Don't wait for a partner to do the things. And ideally, you'll find your lover along the way. Right. And if you don't find your lover right away, you've still lived a really fulfilling life. Right. So do the things. Don't. And then, like, when you're dating, if you start to notice, I call it Hippolytus syndrome, you're shrinking yourself for someone else. Red flag, automatic red flag. You don't have to shrink so that they can grow. There's enough space for everyone. If you quiet your voice, if you quiet your dreams, if you quiet your vision just for this person, they're not necessarily worth that. They're not. Not saying you can't build a happy life and have things that you want, but I see way too many people on the other end of it. Their kids have moved out. They're over 45 and they don't know who they are or what they want anymore because they sacrifice so much of themselves for their family and for their lover, for their lover's career, that they no longer know who they are or what they want to do outside of that family or outside of that lovership. We don't have to self-sacrifice for goodness. So please don't start your relationships off self-sacrificing so you could be the good whatever, because it's not really worth it in the end.
No. And leaving who you are is never going to serve you.
No, no. Then you just will be a stranger.
Yeah. So I'd love to talk a little bit more about being single and thriving. So I know we talked about dating and relationships, but there are a lot of people who choose to be single or are single and are very happy. And there's kind of like this shift, especially in my age group, kind of early 30s. Are you seeing that in the work that you do?
Oh, absolutely. We're seeing people wait longer. This is why birth rates are down. People are waiting longer to settle down, specifically women. Women are going to get their education, they're living life. Also, a lot of women are starting to find that they're not necessarily into monogamy. They might want to be polyamorous and have multiple partners or have multiple metamors. So the partner of your partner is a metamor. So they're finding like, oh, this lifestyle actually suits me. I can be by myself. I can have 3 boyfriends. And this feels really good for me. I'm happy here. Or 3 boyfriends and a girlfriend and a lover, whatever. So I am seeing people like, I am fulfilled by myself. And so we also saw that in research data, right? So we see that people are waiting longer to have intercourse. So younger folks, so not even early 30s, I would say like mid-20s, are actually having less sex than ever before because they're finding that they're able to be sexually gratified with themselves. And possibly with like maybe one-offs, but we're not rushing to the altar anymore. We're not letting relationship status necessarily define who we are, despite like the privileges that come with having a relationship status. So yes, you can be single, you can thrive, and you can do all the things and feel really satisfied. And also note that platonic relationships count. They're important. Romantic relationships aren't the only defining aspect of happiness. And I think our generation and the generation after us have really figured out that platonic relationships are super important as well.
Yes, platonic relationships are so valuable. And I don't know what I would do without all of my girlfriends who I rely heavily on. You know, like they're huge relationships for me. I recently saw a post on Instagram that by like 2030, I think it said more than 50% of women under the age of 40 will be single and not have kids. And, you know, it was kind of asking, like, is this concerning? And I think that there is some concern in it as far as population and long-term overall health of our society. But also, I think that women in particular are really waiting for somebody who really adds to them and somebody who they really feel safe and comfortable with, and they're not settling.
Finally, yes. Like, I was like, who was upset about that? Who had the outrage about it, right? I'm reminded of an episode of Living Single where they asked one of the main characters, Khadijah, what would it be like if there were no men, right? And so Khadijah was like, it would be a bunch of fat, happy women and no crime. Because men have inherently been dangerous for women over time. So we didn't create these beauty standards. We didn't create this wage gap. We didn't create the orgasm gap, right? We didn't do that. We're trying to close it. We're trying to shift, but we can be single. And I think we're starting to realize that, like, yes, I would love companionship and I don't want to have to literally die for it. I don't want to have to like disappear for it. And we saw that in our mother's relationships or our grandmother's relationships and decided that we don't want to have that for ourselves. Absolutely.
Yes. This has been a wonderful conversation, and I would love if there is something that you would hope the listeners take from today's conversation, what would that be?
I'm going to stick by something I said a little bit earlier because I think it is one of the most poignant points, especially for women, is that self-sacrifice does not equal goodness in any aspect.
Yes, I love that. Where can the listeners find you at?
The best place to find me is on my website. So that's Lex, L-E-X-X, sex, S-E-X, doc, D-O-C, .com. So lexsexdoc.com. That's where you'll see all my trainings. You'll see all of my product placement things. And you can also subscribe to my email list, which will not spam you. It might come out once every 3 months, but you can sign up there as well just to see what's going on and even, you know, link back to this podcast episode.
Awesome. I love it. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you. This was great.
This podcast is sponsored by Intimacy Coaching by Jordan Donnell. Have you ever desired more from your sex life or feel like you're having good sex but curious about how to make it even better? Are you desiring a deeper intimate connection with yourself? Or maybe you are dealing with desire and arousal concerns or struggling with communicating your desires with your partner. If you're hearing this and thinking, that might be me, and you're curious to learn a bit more, let's chat. I would love to talk with you more to see if working with me is a good fit for you. To learn more about intimacy coaching with Jordan Donnell, go to coaching.jordandonnell.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again and see you next episode.